Proceed to the third case of the day, the Fishers Association versus Atlantic States case. And we will hear from the appellate's counsel. Is it Butera?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Yes, my name is James Butera, and this is Mr. Mann, who is the co-counsel for the appellants in this case. Correctly identified as a constitutional case, and we will be advancing 2 points before the court this morning with respect to that. One, that the regulation which is in contest here at this proceeding is unconstitutional, and as well, the organization promulgating the regulation, Atlantic Commission, is in itself unconstitutionally structured at this time for reasons which, you know, we will explain, and I'm sure in our brief.
So why didn't you sue Maryland instead of this compact?
Because the regulation in case here is promulgated by the commission, Your Honor.
But the regulation came from Maryland. They only recommended to Maryland. Fundamentally, let's go back
that
to
is,
the basis.
That is,
you got a compact of the various states. The compact itself then makes a recommendation. The legislature of that state acted. Maryland actually objected to it. Didn't want to do it.
Yes, sir.
Didn't appeal this objection to this amendment. And as a result of that, Maryland enacted a regulation. So why did you sue Maryland?
Because the action by Maryland is coerced and must be implemented, Your Honor, because the legislation in 1984 changed the entire constitution, construction rather, of the commission. It went and said it from a federal standpoint, and I'll read it from here. It says, the commission shall prepare and adopt.
Maryland can leave that compact. It's not coerced to stay in that compact.
But if they leave the compact and are thus not in conformance with the regulation, then another regulatory power of this commission is to report that to the Secretary of Commerce that they are in noncompliance, which can result in complete ban of fishing in the Chesapeake Bay and all the other tributaries in which the Maryland fishermen may proceed. So I don't think there's any question here.
I see where you're going with it in terms of, it sounds like in terms of practical, but we're dealing with the issue of standing. Standing is a legal question. And that's it doesn't just apply what it looks like or what it sounds like. It's a legal question. And so when you think about it, if Maryland had not actually enacted or brought forth this regulation through its legislature, could this PAC have sanctioned you?
Could it sanction
you? Your client.
Oh, our client.
Not you. Right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, they could, because they could take advantage of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which allows for penalties enforced by the Coast Guard to anybody violating a regulation. Absolutely, Your Honor.
Let me ask you this question. It seems to me on this constitutional issue, you raised it for the first time on appeal. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. We had raised it from the very start. That it's a constitutional issue because, of course, it's a Fifth Amendment taking, which starts with that. And then we also raise it from a constitutional standpoint that...
No, I'm talking about the framework of the compact.
On the commandeering angle, you asked?
The framework of the compact. It seems to me that you raised that issue for the first time on appeal. I understand it's a Fifth Amendment taking case, but... As to the framework, in the case, or for the first time on appeal.
And perhaps this will help explain. We respectfully disagree with you there, Your Honor. So this was in 1942 that this commission was established, and it was completely advisory in that connection, as are the two other interstate compacts here that we have in the United States. But in 1984, what happened was that they mandated the section that I just read, which put enforcement powers into the commission. Now, With respect, again, Judge Wynn, to your point, the Supreme Court has said in Bennett versus Speer that it does not matter whether the injury complained of has an independent third-party action, in your case, the state of Maryland. That does not exclude injury produced by the determinative or coercive effect upon the application of another person, which is the commission.
Judge, the question is whether did you raise this below? Is this the first time this constitutional issue has been raised on appeal?
No, sir.
Tell me where in your complaint that you challenge the constitutionality of the commission or its structure. Is that in your complaint? I can't find it. I might be half wrong.
What was the sentence that you first said? I apologize for my hair. The first part that you said was omitted?
My question was, I can't find in your complaint that you challenged the constitutionality of the commission or its structure. Did you do that in your
yes.
complaint?
Yes, we do, Your Honor, because...
Where is it in your complaint?
Well, it's where the point where we say the commission was established in 42.
Well, do you have your complaint in front of you? Because we do. Maybe you could point us to a JA site where you raise in your complaint that the commission is unconstitutionally established.
I do not have it, Your Honor. I don't think we do. But see, what happened was in 1942
at your desk that when you come back, I think you got some time to come back. Why don't you look at it?
I will do that, Your Honor.
In the Constitution, in your complaint, what that allegation is.
But part of our constitutional issue clearly raised in the complaint is that when this commission was established in 1942, it was ratified by the Congress. When it was changed in 1950, it was again ratified by the Congress. But then in 1984, when the entire enforcement portion of this issue was placed, that was never ratified by the Congress. And our constitutional question goes to this. The United States Congress does not have the ability to alter a compact between the states. It can ratify it, it can decline to ratify it, but it is not allowed to pass a law. And this does get to the commandeering aspect of our case. It is not allowed to tell the states that they must enforce the law. The theory behind that is when the parties are harmed, in our case, of course, that would be the boat captains, they look to the state as the first party and the last party to do a regulation, but all the enforcement and the power itself comes from the federal government. Let me just read, if I may, from the executive director of the commission. He said before the Congress in 1950, the Congress gave the commission the authority to require states to implement mandatory provisions which the states must follow. Everybody agrees with that. The Attorney General of the state of North Carolina said, the Atlantic Coastal Act enacted by the Congress expanded the ASMFC power to make its decisions binding on the states without, Your Honor, the consent of the states. So the force behind this exercise is entirely the federal mandate onto the commission, and then finally you have the state of Maryland, which just adopts the regulation to their state in conformity.
They've adopted the regulations. So do you have any indication that Maryland would change course and even if this amendment were enjoined? Do you have any indication?
No. In fact, they've told us quite to the contrary.
Okay,
we asked them
so
to.
Then how do you have standing? How can enjoining this addendum redress any injury to you if Maryland has told you they're not going to change course?
Because they will have to. That will be required by law.
No. That's all you're asking us to do right now is enjoin, is to grant a preliminary injunction. We're not reaching, I don't think. What are you asking us?
Well, perhaps this is the best way to explain it. Not only
aren't we here on the denial of your motion for an injunction?
Yes.
Okay, so we're not reaching the merits today.
I understand, Your Honor.
So how is, even if we agreed with you and enjoined this addendum, how does that help you? Because Maryland's not going to change course.
What Maryland said to us, we're not going to help you in this regard. We have a letter from the Attorney General's office because we are afraid there will be a complete moratorium on striped bass fishing in the Chesapeake Bay. Now, if that were to be removed, then Maryland, by logic and their prior behavior, would presumably go back to the position where they say, we do not want to be enforcing this because, as Mr.
You're saying that somewhere down the road, presumably Maryland may go back to saying they don't want this regulation, even though 2 minutes ago you said that they conclusively told you they're going to stick with it.
No, they just said that they would not appear in the case that was pending below.
When I guess they the would trial have judge, if you had brought them into it, which goes to Judge Wynn's very first question, why didn't you sue Maryland?
Well, because both parties are in the chain of causation here.
And what's the irreparable harm to your client?
The effect of this regulation was to drive their business down 70%. And we said that in our complaint. At that point, we thought it would be 50, but it turned out to be much worse. By the time we filed our documents, it was at 70%.
Isn't this regulation intended to save and preserve the striped bass?
That certainly is the purported purpose, yes,
right,
Your Honor. It is.
So, but if you take that at face value, without this, then the striped bass could become extinct and your client would lose 100% of its business. Wouldn't that be worse?
Theoretically, of course, what you're saying is true, but that presumes on the merits that the remedy at hand here is first justified and second would be effective. And let me say this, and perhaps that will help. This is the commission document, and it says, striped bass is not experiencing overfishing. This is a critical point for the very question that you raised, Your Honor. If the striped bass are not subject to overfishing, then how can this regulation, which was prepared and adopted by the commission pursuant to federal law, so if overfishing is not the problem, how can a regulation which further limits fishing make any sense?
Well, the regulation is actually from the state of Maryland. The commission made the determination to indicate to Maryland to proceed in this matter. Maryland could choose to do so. Maybe it was coerced or whatever, but it did it independent with the legislature, notwithstanding it didn't want to. So the regulation is from Maryland.
Well, I agree with you on the final step. But again, looking to the Attorney General's opinion in North Carolina, which is I think shared widely, the act expanded the commission's power to make its decisions binding on the states and defining without their consent. I mean, I don't know how that could be more mandatory. And so Maryland is just...
So you are challenging the constitutionality of this, and are you doing it via Section 1983?
We're doing it of all of the above.
We believe
in 1983.
It doesn't have an enforcement provision in it. So you, in order to be able to take a constitutional challenge, you got to have a vehicle to do it. You can't come under the APA. It's not available.
No.
The Second Circuit made that clear.
The
vehicle, it seems like I think you articulated, is Section 1983.
And we did assert that in our complaint. And
I'm granting that, but I just want to get agreement. That's what you're going under, Section 1983.
Among others, Your Honor, we feel that...
Tell me what the among others is.
United States Constitution.
For a constitutional violation other than Section 1983.
Well, we would point to Marbury versus Madison, Your Honor. That says that where there has been a harm, everyone in the United States is entitled to a remedy in court. And as far as the comment about the APA, we would say that the APA is not the source of our due process and constitutional objections.
Let's talk about Section 1983. How is it that this compact is a person under Section 1983?
Yes. Well, I'm glad you asked that question because, as we know, states are not considered to be persons. But this is not a state, Your Honor. This is not even a collection of states. This is an interstate compact, which in 1942, when the Congress ratified it, defined it as a body corporate, not a body politic, but a body corporate. And so we believe that they are clearly acting under color of law, color of state law. So I think on this question of who regulates whom, it's pretty clear. And in fact, I wanted to point out here is Fourth Circuit case, USB Saunders.
I want to give you a chance to further develop the thought you just brought up that it is a person because it's, I guess, a compact or something different. Right, but sure. I don't know of a case that has held that. In fact, the cases. There was a Washington area Metropolitan Transit Authority. They say that's not a person. So like a governmental situation, and you got to be a person in order to be able to sue under Section 1983. Tell me, do you have a case?
I would.
You got a case when you come back and tell
no,
me what
Your
that
Honor,
case
we're
is?
Here really on a case of first impression. The one that you just mentioned was an employment case. There's another one with respect to a government contract. But here we are talking about.
So you're saying individual. It's a question of first impression.
It is. We believe it is, Your Honor.
You want us to independently determine that this compact is a person under Section 1983.
We would argue that, Your Honor, but I want to say again that that is not the sole reliance on why we are here before the court today. We are here before the court today not on the basis of Section 1983, not on the basis of the APA, but on the Bill of Rights.
Bill of Rights and Mulberry versus Madison.
It followed in 1803 right upon it, and nowhere in the 231 years since Marbury versus Madison was decided does somebody say, well, you have to go check with your attorney general to come before the court. That's the position that we are taking. And Your Honor, go back to your question. I mean, it's so dramatic here. We do a lot of regulation for industries at the federal and state level. But this one is very different because we were never projecting the irreparable harm, as often is the case when you were looking at a regulation, but it's 90 days effective.
Mr. Patera, we've given you some extra time. What we'll do is let's see it from the other side, and we'll come back and hear you on the
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I missed that. Thank you.
Mr. Donahue.
May it please the court. Sean Donahue for the Appalachian Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. And with me at council table is my colleague, Carrie Davidson. And behind her is Robert Beal, who's the executive director of the commission. The district court did not abuse its discretion in denying a preliminary injunction in this case. As the court noted, there are...
Address the issue of standing.
Yes. As the court noted, this was a Maryland regulation that actually is what affects what fishers can do. And there are reasons. We would concede that Maryland adopted the particular one fish bag limit in response to the commission's plan.
But coerced into it? Mr. Patera said they were coerced into
it. I don't think it's fair to think of anything in this regime as coercion. As the court noted, as you noted, Judge Wynn, the member states all continue to be voluntarily associated with this compact that they entered into decades ago. Any state can drop out, and contrary to what my friend said, if a state actually withdrew from the compact, that has not happened before, but it would no longer be subject to this regime. It would lead to a very different one, and it would not be subject to the requirement that it follow the commission's plan. So that's not what we have. We submit that the real standing problem here is redressability, because there is reason to think that Maryland would not rescind this regulation. As we noted in our brief, Maryland actually adopted additional measures, including
cancel. And I thought I heard opposing counsel confirm that Maryland has said they won't reverse course.
Yes, I'm not aware of any sign that they have said that they would, and I think the fact that Maryland didn't take advantage of the internal commission appeal process, it also would have the right to bring its own action in court to challenge the plan. And then there is just a conservation problem here, contrary to what my friends assert.
Yeah, well, I don't know what – I was going to ask you about that. I'm not sure what he was reading from when he said the striped bass are not subject to overfishing, right, because I'm reading the record.
Yes, he's referring to a nettlesome sort of terminological sort of issue, and that is the distinction between overfishing, which is – removing fish from the stock at a rate that is unsustainable and driving the numbers down further versus overfished. And the commission has found, and other scientists have repeatedly found, that the stock remains overfished. That is, the biomass, the total number of fish out there, is well below what it should be. And the commission is in a process of trying to rebuild the stock to the healthy level that it was before. And of course, as the court is aware, this stock, which is so important up and down the Atlantic coast for recreation, for sort of it's embedded in the culture of many states, it collapsed severely in the 80s. And as you see in the record here, there are knowledgeable, scientifically well-grounded people who are worried about the signals that particularly recruitment of the younger fish into the fishery that can be caught. It has been low, not just for 1 year, but for many years. And that's something that's been, you know, is clear in the record. And that's what the commission is attempting to deal with here. If I may, I would like to point out that the very broad constitutional claim that was asserted here, that the commission itself is unconstitutional, it's structurally invalid, and I think you know, the implication would be that this interstate entity that has been successfully operating for many decades, sort of everything it does is in question.
Let me make sure that I posture this case where we are.
Yeah.
The first question we deal with is a question of standing.
Yes.
We decide there's no standing, that's the end of this. Is that right?
I think so, Your Honor.
If we decide there is standing, then we address the constitutional issues, the issues being due process, a takings clause. And
right. Those are the ones that were raised below.
A constitutional challenge in terms of the whole compact that is not constitutional.
Right.
Constituted. Due process is only gets there under Section 1983 from my perspective, and it would be difficult to establish this as a person.
I agree with all that. I think the structural, what we might call the structural challenge that my friend articulated, I think that I don't think he's going to be able to find where in the complaint they raised that. We didn't you know, brief that below. It's obviously a highly consequential claim. We disagree with it strongly, but I don't think it would be appropriate to reach that in a PI review where it wasn't raised.
What about the takings clause? Yeah.
Takings clause was raised, and for the reasons, you know, assuming standing, for the reasons we lay out in our brief, we don't think there's a taking here, that when a manager of public resources like this, which is attempting to protect the resource for everyone, makes a decision to reduce, in this case, to require a particular subset of the fishery to abide by the rules that other subsets of the recreational fishery already have to abide
by. What's the remedy for taking?
Pardon?
What's the remedy for taking?
Normally, it would be to bring an action in the court of claims, and that's another issue. It would not be to say that the agency's conservation rule is invalid.
In other words, can you get injunctive relief?
Right. I don't think so. I think there are a lot of problems and with the claims here, and so I want to take seriously because some of they're all consequential. We think the commission believes that the rule that's attacked here, addendum 2, is important to conservation. Obviously, most consequential is the claim that everything the commission's done for decades, and this is, I would submit that there is a sort of fashion right now to sort of attack institutions and claim that institutions that have been working well are somehow fundamentally defective, and I think we should be very careful about entertaining those kinds of claims, particularly when they haven't been raised in the normal legal process and
response
briefed.
As to whether the ASMFC itself is unconstitutional is probably preliminary, that you don't think it's in that complaint.
Correct. We dispute. We think it is, it is a compact that's been around. It reflects a sort of double legitimacy in our system. It is the states have approved it, and Congress has repeatedly approved it, and Congress has enacted, it is true, subsequent legislation that recognizes that the commission exists and has certain capacities and works with states. And the states from Maine to Florida, red states and blue states, have worked cooperatively on really hard issues that almost necessarily cause pain sometimes when we're trying to protect a common resource, and it's never completely clear what the right answer is, but the commission has a process to arrive at answers that are that reflect everyone's input. In this case, there were 2,000 something comments just on addendum 2, the very sort of short-term measure at issue here. There were many thousands more on Amendment 7 that sort of set up the framework. And so we think that before anyone sort of casually says this whole process is unconstitutional, at least it should be properly pled and briefed by parties and so forth. So I think we win that argument, but I also think it's not even properly presented.
All right, let me ask Judge Floyd. Do you have any more questions, Judge Floyd?
No, sir.
Just a second. We'll thank you for your
thank
argument.
You,
we'll hear some rebuttal from the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. We do have our complaint here electronically. My glasses on. Said the interests of the plaintiffs have been adversely affected.
What paragraph are you reading from?
9-1. The interests of the plaintiffs have been adversely affected, and manifest injustice has resulted from defendants' arbitrary, capricious, and unconstitutional action. And I do want to make up
their actions, but action. That, so that I think Judge Floyd's question was whether you had raised below or in your complaint your allegation that the entire commission is unconstitutional.
We did not in our complaint. We did in the subsequent court documents. And on the compact issue, I do want to read this. The Congressional Research Service, which is a bipartisan organization that surveyed these, and they said this in one of their recent reports.
Is that in the joint appendix, what you're reading from? Is that in the record?
I'm almost certain it is, Your Honor. I'm sorry,
almost
I can't cite it at all.
Almost certain what it is?
Well, it is. And I have the document, in fact.
Okay, go ahead.
So it says that the compacts can preempt inconsistent state law, going to the state law question, but no court may order relief inconsistent with the compact's terms unless the terms violate the Constitution. And we set forth this constitutional objection, and while it was an additional argument in our subsequent documents to the court, we are under the standard rules of federal procedure, I think allowed to make additional arguments on the same principle, the U.S. Constitution, in this case. And that's all what we are doing here is saying these grounds were unconstitutional. Here were the reasons in the complaint. Here is what we said in the documents. Mm-hmm. And here the anti-commandeering argument, I think, is unaddressed in all the cases that have gone before us, and is appropriate for us to get back there and argue with the merits. In the meantime, right now, we're looking at developments with respect to the 2025 fishing season, and our clients, customers, are sitting on the sidelines again, as they did as soon as they heard the news that they were only allowed to catch one fish versus the way they've done it in the past 15 years.
Well, they can catch more than one. They just can't keep more than one, correct? They can catch and release as many as they want. Right? They just can't keep more than one.
Well, you could release it, yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes, you're right about that. But people want to catch the fish, take a picture of it, and take it home and eat it.
Sometimes.
Thank you for your time, Ron.
Thank you very much. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments today, Mr. Terra and Mr. Donahue. Court is going to come down and greet counsel. And Judge Floyd, you prepared to go to the final case?
Yes, sir.
And we will go to the final case for today.
I'm going to step out while we are. Go.
I'm going to stay in the courtroom. Thank you, sir. And... Thank you.